we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Hello, and welcome to America Out Loud Pulse. I'm your host, Nurse Jody O'Malley. Today I have with me co-hosting Nurse Michelle, and we thought that it would be a great idea to bring on a constitutional attorney who is fighting for our civil liberties in America right now. Since 2020, we've noticed so many facets of our society change, and I truly believe it's because we have not been educated on the Constitution. I mean, personally, I can speak for myself in that I memorized what I needed to for a test in eighth grade, and it was never addressed again. And I think it's so important that we know what our rights are, because, you know, our founding fathers put these in place so that we did not have government overreach. And what we've witnessed is just tyrannical measures, and we've allowed it to happen. There's only been a few of us essentially speaking out against this. And today we want to empower you with what your rights are, where you can, how this happened, right? How did this happen? Why is everything being allowed to take place? The mandates, the coercion to get experimental injection, you know, this whole pharmaceutical, industrial, medical complex is just rampant in our society today. And we need to be empowered with the truth. And so thank you, Michelle. Thank you, Ryan, for being here. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, it's a pleasure.
So I believe it all started from the PREP Act. I didn't even know that this National Emergency Act that was put in place in March of 2020 allowed hospitals to be liability free and patients' bill of rights essentially being stripped away from them. You know, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think that's how this, you know, is all being able to continue?
Yeah, well, with the PREP Act, and I will get to that in a moment, but I think that just for the basic understanding for everyone here, it's important to recognize what the Constitution is. And the Constitution is the bedrock process by which our government functions. It is the bottom base level upon which everything else, all of our other laws are structured. It is the supreme law of the land. It is something that cannot be violated by subsidiary laws, such as federal laws, state laws, and things of that nature. And any type of administrative ordinance or policy needs to be consistent with the Constitution because it is the foundational principle upon which our society is built. And so anything that is contrary to the Constitution is actually void as a matter of law. And we saw that the other day with respect to the New York City vaccine mandates, where all of the individual employees were actually reinstated because the policy adopted by Mayor Adams and Mayor de Blasio before him was unconstitutional. It never had any legal effect. And that's what the courts come in to do. That's where the court system plays out, is it's an ex ante system of justice. It's something that we actually look at things in retrospect and decide whether those actions by the government had any validity. And so what we're doing at the Gavel Project, which is a 501c3 nonprofit, public charity, we go around and we find cases that are based on unconstitutional issues. And we litigate those cases to affirm the rights of the Constitution that were already in place, because any actions that were contrary to our constitutional rights are void as a matter of law. And so it takes someone like myself to actually get a ruling, to go to a court, petition the court, and ask the court to declare this and actually vindicate the rights of individuals. And when we vindicate the rights of individuals, we, one, issue what's called declaratory relief, basically saying that you have had this right the entire time, you were not wrong. And that relief comes with it the power of the court behind it, meaning that if the individuals who violated your rights continue to do so, they can be held in contempt and they can be arrested. The other type of relief that you can get when your constitutional rights are violated is monetary relief. And so we are going around, actually, I spent the majority of the early part of this year flying around the state of California, emptying my bank accounts and my wife's life savings to teach kids how to disobey their school's COVID-19 mask mandates, because those mandates violated their First Amendment free speech rights. Their right to exercise and actually disagree with the government is protected by the First Amendment. And that actually protects much more than your mere statements. It protects your conduct as well. As for the PREP Act, though, I will say that there are a number of reasons that the PREP Act is unconstitutional. And it has to do with the Due Process Clause. It has to do with the Takings Clause. And it has to do with the 14th Amendment as well. And I won't go through all of the nuances of that argument. We are actually drafting an argument right now at the Gavel Project to take on the PREP Act. It's something we've been working on for quite a long time. And if there are any other attorneys out there that are listening to this, I'd love to collaborate. I'm looking for a group of attorneys to get together for this. Challenging that type of a federal statute takes quite a lot of financial backing. And so, we have a number of lawsuits that we have already committed to with respect to the COVID-19 mask mandates for school children out in California. We're a parental rights advocacy group. We actually are, I like to brand us as the anti-woke 501c3. That's what you are getting. If you're supporting the Gavel Project, you're getting someone who goes out and actually takes on these woke policies and tries to restore reality in America. That is our objective. So the PREP Act, as far as the background of that goes, for folks who don't know, it was passed after the Patriot Act in 2001. This was a 2003 act, and it was an extension of that. It basically granted the Secretary of Health and Human Services the capacity to arbitrarily decide what constitutes an emergency and grant liability protections to businesses that produce products that might have an impact at reducing the emergency. That's pretty much the standard. It's super low. It's really, frankly, disgusting the way that they worded it. The only way, apparently, under the PREP Act, based on its plain language, to file a lawsuit and succeed is if the Secretary of Health and Human Services actually made a decision in declaring the emergency that was somehow fraudulent or in bad faith. And so that standard, because it's so hard to prove, I mean, it doesn't take into account the fact that we know that Pfizer has, submitted fraudulent evidence to the Department of Health and Human Services. That is, in fact, irrelevant based on the plain language of the PREP Act. It does not matter that there was fraud stemming from any other actors but for the secretary. And that's why it's so important to support organizations like the Gavel Project, who are going to be bringing constitutional challenges to overcome the PREP Act, because you just can't prove fraud from the Health and Human Services Secretary. It's just not possible, in my opinion.
That is so eye-opening. There are literally so many unconstitutional things that we have experienced over this since 2020. I think everybody in the country is literally walking around in a little bit of a daze. Everybody's overwhelmed with, is this all happening to me? Between the federal lockdowns, the federal vaccine mandates, the citizens and their corporations and their employers, the public health officials mandating the vaccine upon the society. And we knew it was coming at a fast speed. We were all watching it. I'm sure there was a large amount of the population who was saying they were holding their hope out that this wonderful thing was going to be this life-saving thing. And there were others of us that are already aware of the damages of vaccines in the country and were a little bit more afraid of this very fast propelled vaccine. But no sooner than like summer of 2021 happened, then we started hearing federal officials saying things about the word mandate. And before I knew it, on my platform on Instagram, I was getting thousands of extremely distressed people who had gotten notice from their employers and from their schools and from their colleges right before they were about to admit to their first year of college. They're freshmen, they're just now coming in, or it's their second year or their last year. And all of a sudden, the school is saying, don't come to school without your vaccine. You have 6 weeks to get your both of your shots up to date, either get your Johnson & Johnson or get your two, but you better have it done before you come to school. And students in the fall of 21 being told, don't come back in January without your vaccine, or you'll have to do an exemption. And some of the exemptions that some of these people were exposing to me that the employers were showing their employees was, there's basically no religious exemption. And if you do try to apply for a religious exemption, you better give us the name of all the religious authorities in your church so that we can find out that what you claim is your religious right is actually your right. So I was literally digging as fast as I could to find anything. Thank goodness for Peggy Hall, the Healthy American, and other people that were out there trying to get data to us about legal words that we could use. And I got to the point in desperation of saying, okay, the most important phrase I want you to make sure you put in your exemptions is, this letter serves to notify you that I am invoking my religious right to accommodation under Title VII of the U.S. Civil Rights Act. And then everything you write after that is, you know, whatever you want to say. But we want them to know that you aren't asking permission for an exemption. You're telling them you're invoking your right. And that started empowering people. And I felt like I was getting a little momentum. And then next thing I know, my husband's international company sends a letter saying on December that you, by December 1, you better have your vaccine up to date as well. And he worked from home and had for 10 years, had no interactions with any humans, and they didn't care. So I wrote them a nice 12-page letter that says, okay, you're going to make an exemption and threaten my family's livelihood. We're going to make sure you understand what you're asking us and how uninformed you actually are. So the reality is everybody wasn't prepared to do something like that. Everybody didn't have the knowledge to do that. And you know what? Most Christians out there who are going to use, or religious people in general, suddenly had to articulate in writing everything they believe about their religion, and put it as it applies to what might or might not be in this vaccine. So that was unbelievable what was happening. And most people, I am sad to say, because of such short notice and such pressure, succumbed to it, because just like my own husband said, that shocked me. The treat run at home nurse's husband said, honey, I'm going to have to do it. And I'm like, oh no, you're not. We're fighting this. So the pressure was unbelievable. So I'd love you to share with us, you know, what you think is the, and it's still happening. I'm still getting letters today from people, their employers today, post U.S. Supreme Court saying that they can't do this, is my understanding. They're still doing it. And there are still hospitals saying you can't come in and be a patient without vaccination. Doctor's offices just this week being told, people telling me they won't take me as a patient without my vaccination. So these mandates are still affecting people. And I'd love to hear you give us some advice on what can give these people hope of how to resist that tyrannical mandate and how to pursue justice.
Okay, so I want to start answering this question by making sure we differentiate between where the Constitution applies and where it does not. So the Constitution is applicable only in instances where we're dealing with state actors, meaning someone from the government or an agent of the state, basically someone acting on behalf of the government. So with respect to private hospitals and seeking medical treatment, very unfortunately, there is not much you can do as someone who is participating in the free market economy with respect to healthcare, as far as choosing medical providers that do not require vaccine mandates. It's really all you can do is you can just choose medical providers that don't have vaccine mandates for treatment. But with respect to individuals that are requiring the vaccination for their employment, for example, there are a number of opportunities that have yet to have been really utilized, in my opinion, as far as arguments go. And so I am in the boat. The opinion is that you should never ask for any exemption from your employer. I actually, so just to give some perspective on the Gavel Project and some timelines here, I started the Gavel Project on October 8th of 2021. And that was in direct response to Gavin Newsom stating that he was going to make the vaccination a contingent precedent for school students to get an education, which is, in my mind, slavery. You are, in fact, nationalizing the bodies of your citizens because you're saying that they need to do this for their fellow citizens. That was the point that he did stated, even though we now know that was all fraud. They never tested it on preventing the spread. That was an admission by Pfizer. We also know that based on Deborah Birx's admissions in June of this year, that one, they based the vaccine on natural immunity. Well, I guess vaccine, I'm putting that in air quotes. And two, they knew at the time in 2020, in March 2020, when they were claiming this was intended to stop the spread, that individuals who became acquired natural immunity could in fact be reinfected, meaning the vaccine did not stop reinfection. So really both purposes for which they said you needed to get the vaccination are null and void. Now we know that. So going back though to the main point here, I was working for a firm in August of 2021 that I was recruited to after taking the bar exam. And so I'm a younger attorney. I dress a little different than most lawyers. And you can see I'm not wearing a suit and tie. I work a lot with kids. And so I like to make myself look a bit like a kid so I can make them more comfortable. I actually spend a lot of time teaching kids to disobey their mandates for masks around California. So I hope to inspire them as well to stand up for their individual liberties in that regard.
You're giving them a positive way to disobey. That's great.
Yeah. I mean, you're not doing anything wrong. You're in fact doing the correct thing by disobeying an unconstitutional mandate. You are asserting yourself and checking the government as you have a right to do as a citizen. But so back in August of 2021, my sister, who worked for a nursing home, or not a nursing home, a children's hospital at the time, that was Phoenix Children's Hospital, she was required to get a mandate and or get the vaccination. And so I wrote a letter to the CEO that was published as well. You can actually find this if you go to the ArizonaDailyIndependent.com and you search for Phoenix Children's Hospital and board members threatened with lawsuit. I demanded or an exemption based on moral grounds. And that's because, and I can explain after the break here, what they were attempting to do, the hospital, was unilaterally modify her contractual terms of employment. And this is something that actually worked. She ended up getting an exemption up on the day after she was supposed to be terminated because she threatened the board with personal litigation with a class action lawsuit. And I actually called their attorneys all incompetent in the letter. I told them that what they were doing was patently illegal and there was no basis in law for them to do this.
That's a lot of information. I cannot wait to get into that. But before we do, I do want to talk about flu season being among us. I know so many of us have come down with colds and flu-like symptoms. And you know, guys, one of the things that I have been doing for quite some time is using a solution that's a dilute povidone iodine that ENT doctors have been using for a long time. It lowers the viral load in your nasal passages, and this is where the virus replicates. We have a wonderful product that I've been using. It's small, it fits in my purse, and I can travel with it, and it's called Cofix RX. It lasts up to 8 hours, and it's effective seconds after administrating.
All right, you've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the povidone iodine-based nasal spray Cofix RX. They talk about it because it's a product that actually works in combating colds, flus, and coronaviruses. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. It's simple. By attacking viruses where they incubate, you make it easier for your body to heal. Check out the Cofix RX banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and save 20%. By using promo code OUTLOUD.
Here on America Out Loud, we emphasize optimal health, and air is the most essential element for life. The average person inhales over 35 pounds of air every day, yet we seldom think about how to rid the air of pathogens swiftly and safely when we need to. The Genesis Fogger Plus HOCL is the only way to quickly and naturally restore air to its optimal condition. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud for a free ebook on everything you need to know about HOCL and receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
All right, welcome back. Let's pick up where we left off, Ryan. We were talking about your sister being a nurse at Phoenix Children's Hospital. I always want to say my hospital name.
PCH is the short for that. So like so many other people across the nation in 2021 in August, my sister received a letter from the CEO of PCH demanding that she get vaccinated for COVID-19 as a contingent precedent, or I guess a contingent of ongoing employment, not a precedent, excuse me. And I realized pretty quickly when I thought about it that this actually was an attempt by her employer to unilaterally modify the terms of her existing employment contract. So just to start, the way that this all works is Arizona is considered an at-will state. So that for employment, that means you as an employee can be terminated at the will of the employer for any reason, and vice versa. You can quit for any reason. There's nothing in place holding you to your employment contract per se. However, Arizona also recognizes by law what are called implied in fact contractual terms. And Arizona courts will actually treat implied in fact contractual terms as express terms, even though there may not be a written contract in place between an employee and employer. There's actually no requirement by law that there be some sort of contract in writing with respect to employment in Arizona. And so Arizona courts, based on this case called ITT v. DeMace, and it was an early 2000s case, if I'm recalling correctly, explain that it makes no sense for an employer to be able to unilaterally modify an employment contract after having hired the employee, because the only way the employee can actually vindicate his or her rights would be to quit. It'd be like if an employer all of a sudden, after hiring an employee, representing to the employee at the time of hiring that they were going to have healthcare benefits, all of a sudden saying, hey, guess what? 2 months from now, if you want to keep your job, you can do so, but you're not going to have healthcare benefits anymore. I'm just taking those away. And you have to just accept it. Well, that's preposterous. That's actually what the Arizona Supreme Court says. And basically, any representation by an employer at the time that you are hired as an employee in Arizona, that a reasonable observer of the hiring process would understand to be a commitment by the employer to the employee is considered an implied in fact contractual term. So that means, you know, like, let's say I'm going to give you healthcare as an employer. I'm going to give you certain benefits. If there is anything that I advertise to you that happens to seem like a detriment to me as your employer, like a cost, for example, and a benefit to the employee, that is actually going to be considered an implied in fact contractual term. It's going to be treated as an express term, even though there may not be any writing. And so,
right. Well, with the terms of the mask, though, you know, a lot of the employers are saying, well, it doesn't harm you, put it on your face.
Yeah, well, I didn't negotiate for wearing a cloth over my face for 6 hours a day when I signed up for this job. What we agreed to was me coming in here as an accountant, sitting behind my desk, having no permanent changes made to my body as a condition of employment, and being able to do my job as I always had prior to COVID. And the court basically explained in that case, ITT Tech v. DeMace, that Arizona employers cannot unilaterally modify employment contracts where continued employment is the only consideration offered to the employee. So just to take a step back, let's talk about contract law for a second. So what is a contract by law? A contract is a bargained for exchange. There needs to be an offer by one party. There needs to be something that is bargained for. This is usually called consideration. Sometimes it's monetary. Sometimes it's the employee or one party or the other agreeing they will or will not act in a certain way. Like, let's say, for example, I enter into a contract to settle an auto accident dispute. As part of that contract, I'm going to agree to relinquish my right at a later time to bring a lawsuit against the insurance company that is giving me the settlement offer. I am actually, that is the bargained for exchange. I am giving up my right under law to bring a claim at a later time in order to have access to the funds now. And the last part of the contract, so there's an offer, consideration, and acceptance. The actual party who is offered something needs to accept that offer. And so here, in this instance, you have an employer attempting to unilaterally modify an existing contract. And so what Arizona says, in order for that to actually be a valid under Arizona law, this is what the Supreme Court says, is there needs to be consideration offered to the employee, and the employee has to accept that consideration. They have to accept the new contract. You can't just unilaterally impose contractual terms on your employees, because the only opportunity for an employee to enforce the existing contract they have is to quit their job. Right. And that's the Supreme Court said that's absurd. Mm-hmm. That's ridiculous.
So why do you think that these employers had so much, you know, behind them to say, you know what, we're making this vaccine mandated, and too bad, you don't like it, leave. Because they didn't think people were going to fight, or people didn't know their rights, or?
I would say both of those were the case. That one, everyone all of a sudden at the same time across the nation was compelled, if you're part of an organization with 100 or more employees, to get vaccinated. And the attorneys across the board that were involved in these types of issues were just completely overwhelmed all at once. In fact, there were not enough attorneys doing this type of work at the time. I quit my job because of the need for people like myself to step into the void and take on the brunt of the situation. And you know, I can tell you, frankly, it has not been easy. I haven't been paid in a year. I've been running a nonprofit, and you know, I've given up my a paycheck just so I can go out and help kids. My wife actually is one of the individuals who is basically burdening the brunt of nearly everything here as far as our family finances go and funding the Gavel Project. So much of our personal income goes to paying attorneys to represent kids that aren't ours, and many of whom don't even live in the same state that we live in. So
something that we as nurses who've been out there on the front line trying to do something to help people get early treatment, help people know how to get an exemption. I'm not even a lawyer. I am just a nurse. And I recognize that people did not have any lawyers helping them. They were literally alone. So I was trying to gather information as well. It's like, we're all in this group of people that recognize the people were crying out for help and nobody was coming to help them. There wasn't enough people to help. So we were dependent on people like yourself. And for me, Peggy Hall, anybody who was opining on anything at all that could help the people. I was spending hours and hours teaching people that, like what I just said about that quote, make sure this quote is in your exemption. I can at least give you that right
make
now.
Make me a demand, correct.
The demand was much greater than the masses of people. And we want to, you know, we want people that are lawyers in this audience to be able to hear in this particular show that we're doing here, that we need other people hearing and understanding what Ryan is saying is needed in our country, to reach out to him and find out how you can be that person in your city, in your county, in your state, because there are people, there are millions of people who absolutely need lawyers right now. And the need for legal action is paramount. And we all know it. We all know that there is a need to pursue justice, but nobody knows how to step forward and do it. So we're going to let you give them some ideas for how they can pursue, how to find lawyers in their area to how to discriminate between which one is what are you looking for, is, or are you providing lists by state of some that you have already found for people across the country?
Yeah. So I actually know a lot of attorneys across the country. I went to Regent, as I mentioned, which is really a national law school. It's one of the only national law schools that I'm aware of that pulls students from nearly every state across the nation. And they provide a very high quality education. I was actually class president of the Student Bar Association my second and third year. I was elected into that position. I was in charge of numerous different organizations all over campus while I was a student there. I received the Community Changer Award for recognizing my commitment to the community and creating positive change while I was at Regent. And I can tell you that I know attorneys all over the country that could do this. The problem is, just as I've explained, is there's no money in this for the attorneys. I had to sacrifice a significant, I quit a job that was on a fast track to partnership to come do this. And so many of my classmates are behind the ball when it comes to getting out of law school. They couldn't jump in. I was blessed to have a near full ride to go to Regent. I graduated from my undergrad debt-free because I worked three jobs at a time at one point and went to school full-time because I'm just a strange character that has a very unique work ethic. And that's just who I am. My wife was blessed to have a wonderful job too. And she supports me and has for quite a long time in this mission. But it's just not possible for so many people to quit their job and forego the hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt that they've acquired over time to pay for their law degree to come do what we're doing. And so they're it's almost like at the point they finally get to where that they're starting to make an income and they're starting to get out of that hole, they've made such a commitment to get there, they don't want to give that up. And so it's just cost prohibitive across the board for folks like myself to do this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a big problem that I have with how Americans have handled this. You know, everybody is just so comfortable. They just want to be comfortable, or they've had so much debt. Hey, I was one of them. I still have almost 100 grand in debt. I walked away from a six-figure a year salary with the federal government. You know, I didn't want to have to do that, but to see where we were at and how we were treating people, I would rather go back to bartending or cleaning houses and let my government loans just sit there. You know what I'm saying? And so I think, you know, people just, you know, they're so used to being comfortable. But if any of us have friends that came out of communistic countries, they saw the writing on the wall immediately from the beginning. So I thank you. I mean, I think the three of us here definitely have a servant's heart, and we have the courage and the wherewithal to fight for this, because this is where we're at now, guys. Like, we have got to use our voices, and we have got to risk being a little uncomfortable. I mean, looking to have to move into with my mom, you know what I'm saying, and my son. But I was willing to do that. I was willing to have my license stripped away because I felt that what I knew was the truth. And I was doing it because I love people and I didn't want to see them die. So thank you for that. And thank your wife for, you know, supporting you in this fight, because it does take a community and family to do this and continue to keep it up.
Yeah, my wife is amazing. Just really quick, I have to say, the most beautiful, the most wonderful, amazing person that I've ever met. I married her when I was 21. I met her when I was 19, and immediately knew that I wanted to marry her. The same night that I met her, I actually texted my uncle and told him that I was going to marry her. He introduced us. And it's a long story for another time, but I can say, none of what I'm doing would be possible without the support of my wife. I wrote an article about this on my Substack. If you want to see it, it's thegavelproject.substack.com. I published it last night, talking about the sacrifices that we've made as a family to get to where we are. Mm-hmm. We run a public charity, and we've been not only sacrificing financially, but when I leave town, I mean, I pick up sometimes in the middle of the night and fly to California, where people, they really want to do harm to me. There are a number of folks that want to hurt me. I've received text messages threatening to rape me. I've got people from BLM and Antifa following me now on social media. I have Planned Parenthood of Los Angeles following me. There are a whole lot of wacky people out there that, would like to see me wiped out because I am on the front lines and actually making an impact. I successfully led mask mandate protests. I helped kids take off their masks and go back to school under threat of litigation. We threatened to sue their teachers and their principals personally up in the Thomas, and it actually worked. Those kids went back to school without their masks on. And because of the effectiveness of what we've been doing, we've become a primary target for a lot of these really unhinged folks. And my wife knows that whenever I go to California, I may not come back. And she burdens that. And, you know, we have two young kids too. We actually quit my job. My wife was 7 months pregnant with our second baby. And when I did that, you know, she believed in me and she knows what I'm capable of. And that's why she's been supporting me this entire time. But when I go to California, she gets sick sometimes. She became so ill during a trip in May that she actually had to get an IV when I came back. I took her to a close friend, another physician that I'm sure many people are aware of, Dr. Huber, who's actually been working with the Gavel Project for quite a while.
Alert from family. Request from...
in the case selection committee process. And that was something that she did because she knew I had to go onto a podcast out in California to reach a wider audience so we could raise funds to keep going as a nonprofit. And she's done that multiple times. She gets sick often because she has to stay up till midnight working, given that we have kids in daycare who sometimes get fever, sometimes get sick. And she's really put herself through the ringer to be able to support what we're doing. So I just want to recognize her really briefly.
Well, I want to say something to that before this segment is over, that if you did not just hear that story from this man who is committed to people that are not his own, not his wife, not his children, he's committed to your children, to yourself, your job, and making sure justice is done. But it takes donations. You need to, if you know people who are willing to donate to causes like this, if you know injustice and you do know injustice has happened, if you have experienced injustice and you have access to anybody who is interested in donating to a 501(c), this is one you need to donate to because he is fighting for all of us. There are nurses out there that have been working. He's working for free. His wife is, you know, possibly risk losing her husband. He is willing to go into the darkness and be the light and expose the darkness and bring it down. And if there's ever a cause to get onto, you need to recognize there are nurses working for nothing, lawyers working for nothing, who recognize there's something to do, and we all need help. And he specifically needs financial help.
Thank you, Nurse Michelle. That was very sweet. And you know, the cases that we have are so important. People don't seem to realize yet. We've been on Fox News, we've been on Newsmax, we've been on some of these national outlets, but the case against Coronado Unified School District, if that is successful, it means that the government can no longer impose mask mandates, period, because it's based on the First Amendment free speech clause. Removing your mask is an act of free speech. The government cannot infringe upon your First Amendment rights. And so I just want to make sure everyone recognizes that this could set a national precedent.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. I would have to agree. You know, at first, when this was all happening, I just was in such despair as how come people aren't fighting? But I'd like our listeners to know that people have been fighting. It just takes a while to go through the court process, right? I mean, just like we saw 2020, they brought up a lawsuit against the mask mandates on airplanes. It took a year and a half for that to go through the court system. And then all of a sudden, with the swipe of a gavel, you know, but Americans were able to take off their mask. And, you know, it was crazy to, I mean, I'm standing around looking like, you needed somebody to tell you that? Why didn't you just do it anyway? You know, we'll be right back after a break.
Hello, I'm Ben Marble, MD, and I founded MyFreeDoctor.com as a donation-supported, faith-based nonprofit with a mission to save lives by delivering free doctor visits to patients in all 50 states of America. MyFreeDoctor.com treats a broad range of health concerns like COVID-19, long COVID, sinus infections, urinary tract infections, rashes, medication refills, and more. So please visit MyFreeDoctor.com, where we're healing America one person at a time.
Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Nutrition company Healthy Cell created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity, unlike other supplements that don't work. Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com, code out loud.
Ryan, thank you so much for that amazing testimony of what you've gone through. And I hope everybody does recognize the importance of donating to the Gavel Project. As if COVID and all the issues that COVID has brought into our lives and our society is not enough, in the midst of all of that, we've witnessed riots with BLM, and we're seeing all this upheaval in our school system for history that's supposed to be taught a certain way, and then the mandates that the children are facing, and then the transgender ideology that is permeating our society. Ryan, you've been doing a lot with that. Would you tell us some more about what you're doing?
Thank you, Nurse Michelle and Nurse Jody, again, for having me on. It's really a blessing to be here. I will say that I speak at quite a lot of school board meetings and a lot of public meetings for county boards of supervisors and the like. And one of the things that I've come to realize over the past year is that you have the same people pushing very seemingly different objectives, but really they're the same. And so on one hand, with the COVID-19 mandates, let's call them the COVID regime, you have all of these individuals pushing to strip our rights as individual citizens, force us to act in a certain manner, and that manner being becoming vaccinated, wearing a mask, complying with all of these medical exemptions, basically granting control over your body to a foreign entity. And on the other hand, we have this, let's call it gender affirmation push. You're trying to have individuals in society teach children in particular that they are in fact born in the wrong bodies. And as a consequence of that, they should be taking actions as children to permanently change their bodies to affirm what is inside of their minds. Well, the fact is, if you read Deborah So's book, I think it's called The End of Gender or something like that. Don't quote me on the title, but I've read it. She goes into the 11 distinct studies on what is called desistance. And so that is someone with early onset gender dysphoria, childhood gender dysphoria, the probability of that child sticking with their new preferred gender as opposed to reverting back to their original biological gender. And what she explains is that based on all of the studies ever done on this issue, anywhere the number is between 60 to 90% of those who manifest with early onset gender dysphoria revert back, they desist to their original state. So why is it that we are pushing these children to take cross-sex hormones, to take puberty blockers? It's because in the same way that forcing a child to get a vaccination is likely to result in permanent harm, you are doing the same thing on this side. You're actually causing permanent harm to
by sterilizing them.
You are in effect creating a lifetime customer for the pharmaceutical industrial complex by sterilizing a child, by getting them to make permanent changes to their body and their psyche, as well as in the same way with COVID-19 vaccines, which are having permanent consequences, especially for young males with myocarditis. And so this really is the same people arguing for both policies because it's in their financial interest to do so. In my view, and I've been interacting with you know, probably a dozen different school districts across the state of California and elsewhere at this point, I can tell you that the same people who are advocating on the ground at the grassroots level are advocating for both policies. And that's why they have financial interests, these nonprofits in particular that are going around advocating for these things like Planned Parenthood, have financial interests in creating lifetime customers with these types of policies. They're hurting children for their own financial benefit, and it's disgusting. And so at the Gavel Project, we are the anti-woke 501c3. We are taking on these cases all over the board because we see the parallels. We recognize it is the same bad guys behind the scenes pulling the strings, and we're going after these folks. We're going after them in their personal capacities. We are suing the individuals such as the school board trustees all personally that violated the rights of these students. We're also getting now into the gender affirmation space as well. We have taken on a case in Virginia where a young girl was actually taken away from her mother because the mother refused to use the girl's preferred pronouns. Mm-hmm. And so this is happening here in America. It is something that needs to be fought hard and fast by a competent group of attorneys. And that's what I bring to the table because of my leadership capabilities, because of my background, not only in sales, but also just managing teams. I ran the student government at Regent. I was the only person, I believe, as far as I'm aware of, that raised thousands of dollars and actually leveraged our assets at the student government to improve the school. And I led a team of great people there. I'd like to do the same thing here. What I need at the Gavel Project is funding. I have attorneys across the nation that I can pick up the phone tomorrow, call and hire. Mm-hmm. For example, there's an attorney out in California that was the executive editor of Law Review at Regent. And she is top 10 student from a school that has a 21% clerkship rate. And for those who don't know what that means, it means that 21% of my class that graduated went to work for judges in chambers writing opinions and helping them with their tasks. And that is akin to the numbers that Harvard and Yale put out. That's the thing about Regent that people don't realize. We're a top school in the nation as far as the objective metrics go. We're discriminated against because we're a Christian school, because we happen to believe certain things. And because we subscribe to a more conservative ideal. And so what I can tell you is that I can pick up the phone tomorrow and hire an army of attorneys and take on these issues. It's just that we are at the Gavel Project resource dependent. We've raised tens and tens of thousands of dollars over the past course of this year. We've also spent tens and tens of thousands of dollars and then some on hiring and paying these attorneys because you can't force people to work for free. Not everyone has the blessing of a wonderful wife like myself who can actually support a family so that I can go out and do all the stuff. So that's what I'll say. I think that there's a lot of parallels to be drawn here, and there needs to be a big fight to solve these problems once and for all.
I think what Ryan is bringing to our attention is that a lot of you parents are out there are panicking over what do you have to do to get your children out of the public school because you feel like you're powerless. You feel like there's nothing you can do. One thing that he's definitely showing us is that there's legal recourse that you can do, and he's going to help you and find a person possibly in your state that can help you actually make the changes that are necessary for that government school to become under the constitutional behavior they should be under. But also additionally, he's exposing that those of us that have already pulled out, I'm a 29-year homeschooler. There's those of us that have already pulled our kids into private school options. But I believe Ryan is also aware that there is within even the private schools, sometimes some things that are not quite right with the way that the money is coming into the schools. And sometimes they can actually mandate upon you as well. They can bring mandates even into some of these private schools. I'm not sure if you can address that or not, Ryan, if it's even outside of the public school sector as well.
Private school is not somewhere that I have a whole lot of expertise with. And what I am doing mainly is making sure that the government schools are functioning within the realm of what they're supposed to do, which is teach kids writing, reading, mathematics, a little bit of history, some science, and that's it.
The three R's. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And so my objective is to get this ideology, this woke ideology, out of the schools by making it incredibly painful for a number of small individuals in the worst types of circumstances to partake in these types of ideologies by indoctrinating your children. If I can sue a few of these folks sufficiently, I think that you can scare the rest of them out of continuing on with this type of behavior. And that's what the Gavel Project was always intended to do. I've been saying since last October that this ends when we hit them where it hurts, which is their pocketbooks. They're financially motivated. And so
let me ask you this. So if you have a teacher that is actually one of these radical woke agenda teachers or a school administrator that's doing that, you want to hear from them, don't you?
I do. Yeah. I want to know about what's going on. I want to know who these folks are. If there is something that is particularly egregious that you think is just shocking to your conscience as a parent, you see it in your school, let us know about it. We're a public advocacy group as well. A lot of what we do is raise awareness about these issues. And in many instances, simply raising hell, I don't really know if there's a better word for it, stops this in its tracks. That's what happened in California back in July when I flew out to speak at the Norwalk La Mirada Unified School District Board meeting when they were considering putting in a Planned Parenthood on campus. I don't know if y'all folks heard about that story. It was a national story. Actually, it was on Fox News the next day talking about it. There was a district there that wanted to open up a Planned Parenthood clinic on their high school campus where children are most vulnerable to peer pressure. And we know based on the science that the gender affirmation, the craze across this nation is manifesting in certain areas, but it is not in others. And typically it shows up in the more progressive cities, but it's not something that happens across the board. It doesn't happen as much in Phoenix as it does in LA. It doesn't happen as much in places like, let's say, Florida, as it does in places like New York. And that's because there is a social contagion aspect to it. Abigail Schreier points this out very brilliantly in her work, that girls happen to be subject to peer pressure, and it targets certain girls that are, let's say, highly intelligent, perhaps a little bit socially awkward. Those folks that happen to be a little bit confused about where they stand in society, and they end up taking steps to join this, let's call it, gender affirmation movement so that they can fit in, so that they can feel better and be accepted by their peers. And so we're fighting that because we know that this is something that is caused by the pressure of the schools. And we actually ended up getting that clinic out of that school. The contract was not accepted. Had it been accepted, there would have been a Planned Parenthood that could have not only diagnosed reproductive health issues on campus, but prescribed and provided medications to students on campus. That was actually explicitly permissible within the realm of the contract. And we know based on their own admissions, this is from the Central and Western Division of New York, the Planned Parenthood website there. They are the number two provider in the nation of gender affirmation hormone therapy, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I think it's important to touch on a couple of things. One, kids do want to fit in. You know, that's, we all grew up and you want to fit into society. And what's being shoved down their throat is this whole gender ideology, wokeism, and empowering our children to critically think and to stand up for themselves. It is so important these days. And, you know, when you have a parent that doesn't know how to do that, chances are the child doesn't learn those behaviors. Like, for instance, my son, my 12-year-old, almost 13, on his Instagram, I checked it the other day, and he wrote his name, Ben, and underneath it said pronouns, /one/cares/go/cry. And I was so proud.
I want to give your son a hug.
I know.
That's like, the kind of disobedience we want to see.
That's a proud mama moment right there. But, you know, what I always tell, once my eyes were opened and I looked and said, okay, well, who is they? Who is they? We always say they are doing this. They are financially supporting. Would you direct people to the World Economic Forum, the Agenda 2030, as kind of the key players, although we know that there's probably some ones behind the scenes as well. But how do parents start to look and say, okay, I'm hearing what you're saying, Ryan. Thank you for doing what you're doing. Now, how can I educate myself on what's happening in society? What would you say?
I would say check out my Rumble channel, The Gavel Project. I actually started a new podcast recently, and I talk about the connections. And in three of these episodes, I interview a school board trustee from Placentia Yorba Linda Unified School District. And she is actually a beneficiary of the Gavel Project's charity. Her name is Leandra Blade. She's a wonderful woman. Anyway, the president of that school board, the trustee there, her name is Carrie Buck. And Carrie Buck works for an organization that was until very recently called Encore.org. And I talk about all of this in a three-part podcast on the Gavel Project's Rumble channel. I would encourage all of you to check it out. Encore.org is a nonprofit with tens of millions of dollars in the coffers that is run by an individual named Mark Freeman, who has been recognized by the World Economic Forum as the Social Change Agent of the Year back in 2014. Furthermore, the board consists of individuals that run organizations like Paramount Pictures, BlackRock, organizations from the Omidyar Network, from the Ashoka Network, which, by the way, is really closely tied to the Bill and Hillary Clinton Foundation. And they are using these nonprofits to control the world. And they're putting their people in place on these school boards. This woman actually is one of the worst individuals across the nation when it comes to the mask mandates. She, in effect, unilaterally adopted a policy that ended up discriminating against all sorts of students who were wearing what's called a mesh mask. For a year prior to that time, all of a sudden they could no longer do so. And the teachers union, who are her best friends, use that as an opportunity to discriminate against students for their political beliefs. And so I would encourage everyone to actually go check that out. It's a pretty amazing story. It implicates the Orange County District Attorney as well, who lashed out against Leandra to protect this individual. And he's purportedly a conservative. So what we're dealing with is black money in the background, pulling the strings. And I am one of those folks who seems to be able to uncover that better than most. That's really what I do well. So I would encourage.
Thank you, Ryan. That so much information that we unpacked today, you know, but one thing I want our audience to take away from this is that we are all here right now on this earth, living and breathing at this time. And I believe that, you know, it is a definitive war against good and evil. And we're all created to be here at this time. And we need to find out what our purpose is. But I will tell you that the light shines brighter in the darkness. And the gift that we've been giving, that we've been given throughout COVID, is for this evil to be exposed. The evil exposed itself, and we see that, we feel it, you know, it's a palpable feeling. We're all struggling on some level. You know, the enemy, I believe it knows its time is short, and, you know, it's just unleashing all of its fury, trying to, you know, get as many people to fall in line with these beliefs. You know, one thing is for certain, God created us. We are not here because we willed ourselves to be. He created us man and woman. He created us to be kind and loving and generous and supportive to one another. So I hope that you guys check out the Gavel Project and you team up with Ryan and become a supporter, hopefully a monthly supporter. You know, there all too often I know that I, you know, find an organization I support and I just say, here's 20 bucks. And I let it go and I let it ride, you know, because I won't miss $20 or if it's $5 or $2, whatever it is, you know, we need to support those that are trying to shine the light in this darkness. So thank you for joining me. This is America Out Loud Pulse. Always a beat ahead.